The Navy is testing a well-known approach to take on a big cybersecurity problem. Later this month, it launches the USS Secure effort to ensure disparate networks and systems on board ships are protected from hacks or computer viruses. Rear Admiral Lauren Selby is commander of the Naval Surface Warfare Center. In his interview with executive editor Jason Miller, Selby describes the USS Secure.
What that is, it's not an actual ship. It's a virtual connection of multiple systems that we can actually monitor, manipulate, and test without affecting what's going on a real ship. And so it allows us to put together different systems that we would have on ships in a virtual environment, and not necessarily all in Dahlgren, Virginia, but possibly anywhere across the United States at different warfare centers or different parts of the Navy research and development establishment. So it could be a nav air facility, a naval research lab, Office of Naval Research, or SPAWAR out in San Diego, which is the Space and Naval Warfare Center in San Diego. So that allows us to put these systems together like they would be on a ship, and then test them, monitor them, manipulate them to see how resilient they are against cyber attacks.
Now, this is a fascinating project for many reasons. I think the first off that jumps out to me is the fact that it's taking multiple systems from multiple places across the country and bringing them together. So talk about how you're doing that first, and then we'll get into some of the other issues around it.
Sure. Well, just think of your own personal life. I mean, we've become very netted as a society. So think of your home. I mean, inside your home, you probably have more devices than you care to imagine that are actually connected to the internet, or could be if you choose to. I mean, my own home, obviously you've got our computers and tablets and TV systems that are connected, but even my treadmill is connected to the Wi-Fi system and connected to the service that provides me the maps that I run on when I run on my treadmill. So we are very connected already in our personal lives. It's no different, obviously, in DOD or certainly in the Navy. And when it comes to testing systems, we find it's more efficient, more economical to do some of this testing virtually. So instead of taking all of these systems and trying to bring them to a location, hook them up, ring them out and test them, what if you're able to keep them in their home labs where they're originally developed? So for instance, for the Naval Surface Warfare Centers, a lot of our topside systems, radars and combat systems, are handled out of places like Dahlgren, Virginia, some out of Damneck, Virginia, down near Virginia Beach. And a lot of our below-deck systems, our engineering systems, our gas turbine systems, and other what we call hull mechanical and electrical systems, are handled out of a place in Philadelphia, the warfare center there. So again, instead of bringing all these systems together in a physical sense, what if we could connect them in a virtual sense and then test them that way? So that's kind of what the concept's all about. It allows us to do things faster, more economically, more efficiently.
And I think that's fascinating that you're bringing all these together, because previously, what would you do? Would you just have to bring them all together in some place, or would you test them one by one and then hope that they would all kind of not harm each other when they were brought together aboard a ship?
Well, I mean, okay, so some of that would be maybe you would actually wait until a ship was actually built and put together. So there's obviously risk there. Now, you obviously would do some things ahead of time to try to preclude that from happening, but you may not have thought through or even could conceive every possibility. So by doing this virtually before you get to the ship, you're eliminating even more risk. There are other instances where we would actually stand up full systems in labs, maybe at a contractor site, and put together the system there, the actual hardware, hook it all up, bring all the sensors, wire them all together, put radars on top of buildings, things like that, and wire them into the system and actually have it functioning in a building somewhere. And we sometimes still do that, but if you want to actually now connect that system with another system that that ship would have, that contractor or that facility probably doesn't also do that. So for instance, maybe radar is done at one facility, sonar is done at yet another facility, and maybe the actual combat system or the computer system that takes all those inputs is done at another facility. So instead of trying to bring them all together, which obviously would cost and it'd take time, what if we could just hook these things up virtually? And that's what we're doing.
And without getting into the bits and the bytes and the deep of the technology, because I know engineers and others handle that, and for our audience as well, they don't want to get into there. But when you talk about virtually, there's the cloud that we talk a lot about, and then there's virtual machines that are part of the cloud or virtualization. So when you say hook them up virtually, there's an instance running on a server, and that's what's being tested. Is that the basics?
Well, there's actually Yeah, there's a computer system that's running in a facility that's part of a, maybe it's part of a network in that facility, and that is connected via a secure network to another facility across the country somewhere, or maybe across town. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, I think that just helps give people a sense versus as you just described it with the building of, oh, you bring everything together in a building and see how it works, or versus when you talk about virtually, there's so many, I think, different definitions of what virtually means anymore.
Right.
And in many ways, I mean, when you talk about the connections in our lives, there's a term, obviously, the Internet of Things that we talk a lot about.
Yes, absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Is this kind of on the cusp of the IoT? Because IoT, you think about, as you said, your treadmill, your Fitbit, your TV. These are computer systems, so they are not considered the Internet of Things, but they're still the connections is what's your testing here.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, that's a great kind of topic. If you think about where we are kind of in history, okay, so the Internet, I think you could Google this, but it's probably about 1989 when people say the Internet came about. There's a great book called The Second Machine Age, and it talks about transition of technologies. And basically the premise of the book is that throughout history we've had different technologies introduced. And in each case, there is a period of time that it takes, usually it's a generational time period that it takes for people to adopt the technology and really utilize it to its full advantage. So if you think back to, just go back to something like the steam engine, late 1700s. That comes along, James Watt perfects the steam engine. It took 30 or more years for that steam engine to really be brought into use in factories in America. And then when the next big leap was electrification. Well, I mean, the other big thing that we do when we have new technologies is we tend to try to jam them into the same form factor of the old technology. So a great example of the steam engine is in the 1800s, most of the factories in North America, once they adopted steam, would have a large steam engine somewhere in the factory, maybe in the middle of the factory. And coming off that, there'd be a flywheel and then pulleys and belts and maybe shafts that would drive the saws and the grinding machines and the lathes that were running machinery throughout the factory. Well, when the electric motor came along, what they first did was they took a large electric motor and they just wholesale swapped out the steam engine for the electric motor. And I think some people thought, oh, this is going to be a great thing. It's going to make productivity go up. Well, the reality was it didn't really change productivity at all. It made life a little quieter in the factory. It made it a little cooler. But we didn't really adopt and get the full advantage of that machine until years later, after a generation of leaders retired, the younger folks came along with kind of new ideas. And they looked at this and they said, if we were able to take that motor, and maybe if you had a smaller motor, and you're able to put it throughout the factory in different locations, so you have a motor that would run the saws, and the motor that would run the lathes, a motor that would run the conveyor belts. Hey, what if you also brought in your parts in the front door, and you had a conveyor belt system, and out the back door would come the Model T Ford? Oh, a conveyor belt. I mean, that it took about 30 years for that transition to happen. We're in the same transition now with the Internet. Computers have been around for a while. We've gone through many transitions with computers. But with the Internet, we're kind of coming up at the end of that 30-year period. So it's round numbers, 1990 comes along. 2020 is about 30 years. So we're very much still kind of in that technology discontinuity period between one technology and the next thing. And I think in a lot of ways, a lot of the things you're seeing with cyber attacks and just all of these, how many new credit cards have you gotten over the last 3 or 4 years? I'm guessing a few.
Feels like at least so once every 3-5 months.
We're in that transition still, and I'm convinced that 30 years from now, 40 years from now, we're going to look back on this period and go, man, we were stupid. If we only had thought of this back then. But the reality is it takes time. It takes making mistakes. It takes learning from those mistakes so you can kind of incorporate those lessons into the new thing you're making, whatever that thing is, to really gain the full advantage of it. So, that Second Machine Age, the book, really kind of spells this out, but it's a fascinating read. But we see these things throughout our history. I mean, the same thing, we went from the horse-drawn carriage to the truck or to the tank in warfare. Same kind of thing. I mean, we initially tried to use the motor-driven vehicle to do the same thing the horses did. And then we started seeing the benefits of putting guns on it, putting big wagon beds on it, just totally making it do what it could really do for us in a different, think different mentality, kind of like Steve Jobs, think different.
Interesting, because I think part of the goal with cybersecurity is to think differently, because same old hasn't been working, is not working. So this type of approach is kind of an innovation in many ways. Talk a little bit about, there's 28 CyberSafe ship builders taking part of this. This is a lot of collaboration.
Yep.
This is a lot of effort. Talk a little bit about how this process works to bring everybody together.
Yeah, so one of the big things that that you're going to hear me talk about, if you talk to me again, is I always talk about collaboration. So when I look at my team of Warfare Center, I mean, I've got about 17,000 folks across the country that are, I tell them they're really the technological backbone of the Navy. I mean, they're the brains behind what we do every single day in the fleet, whether it's designing the next ship or maintaining the current one or solving a problem that's in the fleet today. And I tell them that none of us individually is as good as all of us working these problems as a team. So none of us is as good as all of us. Collaboration is key. And we're doing that same thing when it comes to cybersecurity. So we recognize that, we've got a large percentage of the scientists and engineers in the Navy, about 30%, but we don't have all of them. There's a lot of smart folks at NAVAIR, a lot of smart folks at Space and Naval Warfare Command out in San Diego and Charleston, South Carolina. We're trying to lever all of this expertise. So we're just one part of this team, but we've recognized that by bringing all these folks together with these disparate backgrounds, diverse teams are going to solve these hard problems. That's what we're doing.
And I think the diversity is important. It's the whole idea of crowdsourcing, right? And
absolutely.
As you said, I'm smart, you're smart, together we're smarter. You guys just in took off on the inaugural exercise that was slated for this month or just about to begin. Talk a little bit about what that exercise is going to look like and what do you hope comes from it initially?
So what you're talking about is kind of the real initial test of USS Secure. So later this month, we're going to actually, as I described earlier, make sure everything's hooked up properly, actually ensure that we can talk from one facility to another facility somewhere else in the country, have the machines talking back and forth, and just ensure with the concept, prove the concept. Make sure that this idea of a USS Secure is a valid concept going forward. And, fundamentally, we all know this is the right concept. We just have to prove it. And like anything else in life, until you hook things up, until you turn the switch on for the first time, there may be something you find out you just didn't expect. And that's what this is all about, just making sure we got it right.
It's going to be over a 3 or 5 day period. Are you able to give me a little more details in terms of how long it's going to last? And then who's running it? It comes from your command, obviously.
Dahlgren is the focus. So down in Dahlgren, Captain Brian Durant's the commanding officer down there. So it's his team that kind of came up with this concept. And then now we brought in a lot of other members of this team to actually help work this problem. Schedule, quite frankly, like a lot of things that you're doing for the first time, I think we're scheduling for about a week or so, but we'll see how it goes. And, if we need more time to continue to learn more, that's what we'll do.
Very nice. Now I'm speaking with Admiral Lauren Selby, the commander of the Naval Surface Warfare Center. I'm Jason Miller, your host today. One other thing about this is, where'd the concept come from? Did you guys, this is not necessarily a new concept to hook up systems under USS Secure together and then test them, but someone had to say, why don't we do it this way instead of the other way? You talked about the building issue, the improvement of efficiencies, the ease of use to hook things together versus bringing everything together in a building. But where did this idea come from?
Well, I mean, there's been a lot over the last several years. There's been a lot of initiatives across the Navy attacking speaking cyber in particular. So we had a task force, Cyber Awakening, that was set up in 2014 by the Chief of Naval Operations, and that's in last year that transitioned into something we call the Navy Cybersecurity Division. And so these teams have been really working these cyber issues. And so we've come forward with some options for how you could actually speed up this process. Again, instead of taking the time to move equipment, bring them together, hook them up in one location, we see that by doing this virtually, we can actually start solving problems sooner. That's what this is kind of about. But the concept of hooking up equipment and doing tests virtually, I mean, that's been around. We've done this in other smaller substantiations probably for at least a decade to test systems. So it's not the first time we've done that. But with this cyber focus, this for Naval Surface Warfare Center, this is the first time we've gone after this.
And from a challenge perspective, to hooking all these systems up together, bringing them and getting results and then making changes, is what's the challenge? Is it just that it's the first time? So that's, as you mentioned earlier, you'll see what happens and you're not really 100% sure? Or is there other challenges that maybe...
Well, I mean, some of this has to do with, I mean, think of bandwidth issues. I mean, you're now trying to hook things up that on a ship, they would be right next to each other, plugged in, you know, right there next to each other, and you've got a lot of bandwidth. Now you're going across, you know, secure internet connections across the country. So we've got to make sure we've got the right capacity. You know, and again, like anything else, when you put things together for the first time, they're sometimes might be some interface issue you haven't thought through properly. So you got to make sure that it actually works. I mean, think about the apps that are on your iPad or your Surface or whatever device you use. I mean, before that thing gets to you, before you can go get that at the Apple store or the iTunes store, wherever you get it, before you can do that, they've done all kinds of testing. And I guarantee you the first time they test it, it probably doesn't go exactly like they want it to go because of some interface mismatch, some problem with the you know, the language that they're trying to put into the code, things like that. So we got to make sure we got this right. Quite frankly, this is not science. This is just engineering. So it's not, you know, it's not like we're trying to solve some unsolvable problem. It's just engineering. Just putting stuff together, making sure it works properly.
Just engineering.
Just engineering. Yeah.
Just simple.
And that's not me. That's my smart folks in the field. They're the brains of this outfit. So yeah.
Once you get the results from this, what happens next? What's the long term vision for this program?
So once we've kind of wrung out the U.S. secure concept, we'll then work with some other parts of the Navy that want to do some testing, and we will basically avail ourselves to their testing. And I really don't want to say much more than that, but that's kind of the plan.
So just to expand it, if possible, if it makes sense in the right areas. Excellent. I think you know, this is almost like that proof of concept. You know it will work in certain, as you said, smaller circumstances. But going forward, the bigger circumstances, that's the real difference maker, potentially, as you said.
Right.
Broadening the topic now and broadening the discussion now beyond just USS Secure, the project, the program, cyber vulnerabilities across warships. Generally speaking, are they at more risk than other systems that maybe are on land? How do you kind of measure risk, and how are you guys addressing risk when it comes to systems on board ships?
Well, I mean, just like we talked about kind of in our personal lives, we know that we're being attacked every single day. And I mean, personally, we're being attacked. Credit cards are being, you know, hacked and stolen. And I'm sure that... some of our home Wi-Fi networks are probably being infiltrated by our, you know, maybe our neighbors, maybe some criminal element, who knows? So that's going on every single day. At a national level, we know that there are others, maybe nations, maybe terrorist networks that are trying to attack us. I mean, we'd be foolish not to think that. And as a result of that, clearly, because our Navy is, it is the most capable Navy on the face of the planet today, clearly other nations are looking for an asymmetric way to attack us. And so this is one of those possible pathways to try to do that. And so we have to be cautious of that. We have to understand what the risks are, and we need to make sure our systems are designed properly to thwart those types of attacks. And that's what we're trying to really proof out here with USS Secure.
How much concern do you have, generally speaking, again, I know it gets into some sensitivities, that certain systems that are built for ships and other Navy, Army, Air Force, whatever, vehicles and such, are not necessarily thought of in the cyber world initially? Like, if you think about the electric grid for you and I, for wherever we live, there's a lot of concern about critical infrastructure, electric grid, finance systems, banking systems, water, that are built and have been put together, but not necessarily with cyber on the front end or even cyber thought of at all. Does the Navy have that problem? Or because you guys have been facing these cyber attacks for so long, everything has cyber, at least initially in the front end, you hope it does?
Yeah, what I would tell you in that is that I think that we're all basically kind of at the beginning stages of this cybersecurity journey. And you know, there's been some obviously big things happen in the news, OPM and some other data breaches that have been out there that have put a lot of spotlights on this. And I talked about credit card fraud. I mean, that's already going on. It's no different really anywhere across not just the military, but across the planet, quite frankly. And we're all now actually, so we've kind of realized this issue, and we've realized it for a number of years now, and so there have been a number of steps that have already been taken. We're now basically saying, hey, what else should we do? What else can we do to try to make sure that our systems are in fact resilient. And you know, we need to protect the systems. We need to be able to detect if somebody's doing something to the systems, and then we need to be able to react properly so that if something does happen, we take the right measures to stop whatever's taking place from happening. And then once the conditions warrant, we want to be able to restore those systems back to full operation. So we're kind of walking through how you do that. So what I would say is that, there's a lot of systems on ships. Again, the world is very much computer-based today. And that's throughout all of our lives, everywhere. I mean, think about your car. Think about, like I said, your home. Ship's no different. So a lot of systems, a lot of connections from those systems. So we're looking at those to try to see which ones are vulnerable, which ones are not. That's what we're trying to do.
When you talk about effort and you're working with the commanders of those ships, you're working with the combatant commanders in that sense. Do you get a sense that they also understand the importance of cybersecurity? Because I think one of the challenges that other agencies, whether it's within DoD or not, is getting that mission area to say, okay, cyber is part of my mission and is important. As you talked about the cyber awakening effort across the Navy from 2014, that was kind of that first effort to really get people to go, hey, this cyber thing's important. You got to pay attention. Do you see that happening?
No, absolutely. And so, in fact, I mean, there have been several very senior naval officers that have said cybersecurity is commander's business. And so, I mean, that bottom line is that all ship COs, all flag officers, all major commanders across the Navy, this is your business to make sure your systems are secure. And that is flowing from the top down. And even here at NAVC, so Naval Sea Systems Command, about a year and a half ago, the commander, we have a strategic framework, a strategic plan, and we added a fourth pillar. So there were three pillars, and we added a fourth pillar on cybersecurity, again, to emphasize to the workforce that this is commander's business, and we need to make this a part of how we do business every single day.
And I think just to tack back to the beginning of the conversation, by putting something together like the USS Secure effort, that brings that point home a little closer, because you're saying we're not just looking at it from your system or my system, but our system together, because if you fail or I fail, we all fail. I think that's part of the message.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, again, it's a team sport. We've got to work this collaboratively. None of us is as good as all of us. And we're trying to bring the entire team around to obviously sensitize them to the issues we've got, but also to get their good ideas on how to attack the problems.
It's been, just to talk about the Naval Surface Warfare Center, it's been about a year and a half since the command, I guess, has been in place, or for you to be in place.
Over in October of 2014.
Talk a little bit about some of those capabilities for the command, from an IT perspective, what you're looking at. Anything that you're really focused on over the next year, I mean, outside of the cybersecurity from an IT perspective?
Well, again, so one of my big objectives has been to really emphasize the collaborative, the benefits of collaboration, and not just across the warfare centers, but across the entire Navy's research and development establishment, and making sure that, and also that includes industry, academia. That means that my engineers should be working closely with whoever the experts are in the world on these issues. They need to be working with those folks. And so as we on throughout this year, we need to make sure that we continue to double down on collaboration. And as I've said several times, with this being commander's business, I want this to be everybody's business. And when you call into NSWC, no matter who you get on the phone, if you've got a problem, they're gonna help you solve that problem. And if it happens to be a cyber problem, we'll get you connected to the right experts to help solve that problem.
One thing that occurs to me as we talk about collaboration and you talk about cybersecurity and the USS Secure effort is the workforce. Many times finding the right workers, finding the people with the right skill sets is very difficult, not just across the DoD, but really across all private sector and public sector agencies and organizations. How are you guys dealing with that challenge?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And if you think about, think about places like Silicon Valley, and there's a lot of buzz on what's going on out there. And so a lot of folks that study computer science or no cyber, a lot of them want to go to places like that. And so that's hard for the government to try to attract those same people. And so we're working really hard to try to, first of all, educate people on the opportunities that we have in the warfare centers, but also to really tell them about the mission and explain them how important what we do is for that man or woman that's on that ship, submarine, aircraft, squadron, somewhere on the what I call the pointy end of the spear. you know, somewhere forward deployed, Western Pacific, or maybe they're even in Iraq or Afghanistan, how important it is for having smart people back here working for the government in our warfare centers that, I mean, really any skill set, but in the case of cybersecurity, know cybersecurity so we can help protect those men and women on the ground from cyber attacks. So that's a challenge. But I'll tell you, when you talk to people in those terms, people get excited. And there's a whole cadre of folks out there that, you know, money's okay, but, you know, Silicon Valley money. But they're like, you know what, I'd rather work for an organization that has this kind of a mission. And we have that kind of mission. And so we are trying to rebuild, or not rebuild, but build up our cyber workforce. You know, it's kind of a newer area for us. So we're trying to get out there and educate folks on some of the opportunities we have at our warfare centers and trying to bring them in and tell them, hey, this is, you know, okay, you can make more money somewhere else, but this mission is really important and we need you. So that's what we're trying to do.
I think it always comes back to mission for a lot of people. You're right, money is nice, but if you can feel good about what you're doing every day,
absolutely,
it matters.
And again, this is a hugely important mission in a lot of folks. And everybody that works at the warfare centers, they understand that.
One other piece that kind of occurred to me as we're talking through this is, you know, the USS Secure is a very innovative approach to dealing with a cybersecurity problem. Innovation, obviously, is important for every organization. Talk a little bit about how you're really focused on innovation and bringing that culture, if you will, more to the warfare center.
Yeah, absolutely. So our new Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral John Richardson, he calls it his design for maintaining maritime superiority. One of the tenets of that design involves establishing high velocity learning in our organizations. And when you think of, you know, what is high velocity learning? I mean, to me, that's about tapping into that kind of that hidden potential that all of us have and we hold back unless we have that really inspiring boss or we have that really important mission that really kind of inspires you to kind of give your all, to really stretch yourself, think differently, think critically, and come up with new ideas and just double down on your efforts to help solve the problems for the warfighter. And so one of the things we're trying to do across the Navy, but certainly for me in the warfare centers, is to go out to the workforce and tell them, look, I value each and every one of you, and I need you to help me solve these problems. We need the Navy needs you to solve these problems, and we need you to think different about the problems. So when you're given a task, you know, if you've got some solution that you think may be a little different, put it out there. I want to hear about it because you just may be the one person who's got the new idea that none of us have ever thought of and it could solve our problems. Maybe cheaper, maybe more effectively, I don't know, but it's different. It might be something that will help us solve our problems. So I've been trying to get out to the warfare centers and tell them that's what I expect from them. And from that, we've actually established at each warfare center some form of an innovation cell. Some call it innovation cells. We've got one that's called the Rapid Innovation Prototyping Lab, or the Ripple, which is out in Crane, Indiana, at Naval Surface Warfare Center Crane. And these groups are basically tasked with trying to solve hard problems. And so, you know, we've got one, the Ripple one, has been solving some problems for our SEAL community. And we've got other ones that are solving problems for our unmanned underwater vehicle community. But they're coming up with some really ideas. And I think what's really unique about it is these are men and women that we pull out of their day jobs and we give them a little bit of white space in their schedule to go to a location, a cell, a building, where they meet with maybe a dozen folks get together. And they're from all over their respective organizations. So you pull a disparate team together, you put them in a location, and you give them a task. And they go off and solve the task, and they come up with all kinds of ideas, and they get really excited about it. So we're trying to make this part of our culture, not just in the warfare centers, but across the entire Navy. It's really exciting.
It sounds like something that so many other agencies could learn from because of bringing, again, those people from different expertise together
different
to
walks
solve
of life,
a problem.
Different, that's right. Absolutely right.
And I think sometimes, as we've been saying all along, the bringing that group together can really solve those problems. So unfortunately, though, we are out of time. My guest has been Admiral Lauren Selby, the commander of the Naval Surface Warfare Center. Admiral Selby, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you very much. Been great talking to you.